Welcome to the Chief of Anything podcast, in this four-tone, vier-klang format with Catherine Wütz and Dominik Klimek. Our vier-klang format talks about the interplay of purpose, vision, values and strategies, and about what happens to companies when we bring these four together. Here, I hear firsthand how the vier-klang strategy has transformed companies and what I can expect from its implementation.
Hello, Dominik. How are you doing today?
Hello, Catherine. I'm doing phenomenal today. How are you?
I am wonderful and I am super, super excited about our guest today. We're talking to Feroz Borat. He is the CMO of Discovery and connected to us live from Johannesburg in South Africa. Hi, Feroz. Great to have you here. How are you today?
Hi, Catherine. Hi, Dominik. Thank you for having me. It's really a pleasure to join you guys today.
It's a pleasure to have you. And as always, we like to kick this session off with maybe a little story. Feroz, I know you are already familiar and have been familiar with the Vierklang model, so with the model of purpose, vision, values, and strategies that has been lived in many businesses, in many companies around the world for quite a while. And you personally have known about this model for quite a while. What's kind of like your most impactful story or your favorite story to tell in regard to this model of purpose, vision, values, and strategies?
I think my favorite story has to be, Catherine, when I was asked to come to this dusty little patch in the middle of the Arabian desert to meet people I had never met before, to a country I've never heard of before, to join a very tiny little organization from a very big organization in South Africa. And it seems improbable that anybody would make a decision like this. And it's interesting to note that I was about to be married probably a month later, and I was going to be having to ask my new wife to make this little journey with me. She was a doctor here in South Africa. And so off I went in the middle of December. And interestingly, the thing that swayed my decision was the clarity of the people that I met who had all gravitated around this idea of a purpose-based organization. There was crystal clear in terms of what their mission was, what their vision was, what their purpose, why they were there. They were super clear as to what that was going to be, and they knew how they were going to do it. And whoever I spoke to, because the model at Vodafone Qatar is, as they were recruiting talent, they would bring people into Qatar and they'd have them meet with a range of colleagues. And each person that I met, from the CEO right down to the most junior individual in the team, was crystal clear as to what their reason for being there was and how they were going to achieve it. There was not even a deviation in the language. And that's what got me interested in this very unique organization called Vodafone Qatar.
Wow. So you came from like Vodacom in South Africa, like a huge established company. You're about to get married, and then you have the chance to go to Qatar. That's not even on your radar, to a small company. And I assume you have met the CEO of Vodafone Qatar. Like, what impact did he made on you so you were able to convince your wife to like leave her job as a doctor and move to Qatar from a very well-established job you had in South Africa?
Yeah, I think it's really profound. You know, when you met somebody like Graham, other than the brilliance of the man, intellectually, he was just on another level. But he also understood how to deal with people. And again, I speak again of this clarity that he had in terms of what he wanted to achieve professionally through Vodafone Qatar. But that purpose narrative that resided deep within the individual played out in his personal relationships, the manner in which he engaged with people, with somebody like myself, who he was trying to potentially attract to Qatar. He used that very effectively in trying to resonate and to build that relevance with me, to be able to have me share in that vision. So maybe I bought into that Kool-Aid very quickly, right? So I loved what he was selling, but he was crystal clear in terms of what it is that he wanted to do professionally. But you could see that those, when he articulated the values, he wasn't just talking about it from a corporate perspective. He was talking about it from a personal perspective. And you got the feeling that this person, this CEO, knew what he wanted to do, but when you worked for him, you were going to get the best of this person as well, and that he subscribed to all these values in his personal capacity.
Wow, and how did this make you feel, like just being in this presence and having the chance to go there? Like, when you think back to that moment, what were your emotions back then?
I mean, it was a whirlwind of emotions, right? You can imagine, as I said, you know, coming to a place that you don't speak the language, you don't know the culture. I've heard of Qatar before, but I'd only ever flown through when it was a fledgling airline, which was Qatar Airways. Never stepped foot into the country. And, you're filled with a lot of trepidation. Like you said, I'm about to make a big life journey on getting married, and now I'm asking this person to leave her very successful business, come with me somewhere else. But it's interesting that the sense of belonging that one felt when you arrived in Qatar. I met these people, I swear to you, Dominic, for that day. I was out the next day on another flight to come back to Johannesburg. But in that short period of time, I had some meetings at the office and we had dinner that evening. And Graham had invited, you know, pretty much the entire company to join us for dinner. It was 40 people. But we had a 40 people party, right? And you could get the sense of what this company was all about. It was small. It was intimate. It was about the people. And that was fundamentally what this was about. It wasn't just values for the sake of having values up on a chart. It was genuinely about the people. And that's the sense that you got when you landed in Qatar, or when you landed at Vodafone Qatar, that you were going to be part of something very special, but something that was going to grow into something really big.
That sounds incredible, Feroz. And when you talk about Graham, and we've had a few guests in the podcast who've talked about Graham Maher and his impact on others, right? Then I can almost feel the tingling, you know, and the energy as you're speaking about it. And I think your point just now, you know, you could see what the business was about, and you would get the person as well, and the person uplifting those values and those standards and applying everything to themselves as well. Now, you know, we fast forward a little bit. You're now a chief marketing officer of Discovery in South Africa and back kind of in your home market. So how have you taken these learnings, these experiences on, and what have you kind of like made out of them for the rest of your career to this point that has brought you here now?
Yeah, Catherine, it's, you know, this conversation and prepping for this conversation has made me reflect a bit, but it does only really, as we started talking earlier, that it dawned on me, or it reminded me at least, that there's no question that Graham has been an indelible part of the growth of my career since Vodafone Qatar days. In that there's not a job that I enter into, and I've been into multiple banks since coming back to South Africa, into this insurance company, a health insurer, etc., that I don't talk about Graham Maher and what he taught me, and what the opportunity at Vodafone Qatar and all my colleagues at Vodafone Qatar taught me. I was exposed to, I would say, the best thinkers in the world, because it was an assembly of people from all four corners of this planet that converged on one place, and we were sharing ideas, thoughts, ways of working that I was never exposed to before. And Graham's brilliance was the ability to harness all of this, the power of all of this thinking and different values, different cultures, different ways of working. I mean, the South African way of working is very different, I would imagine, to an American way of working, different to an Australian or New Zealand way of working, different to a German way of working. But he was able to bring it all together, and then he unleashed something that was really, really very powerful. So I've learned a lot in that process. And there's not a time that goes by that I don't share those learnings with the people that I get to lead. I have the honor of leading, and I shared a lot of the principles that I learned through my time under the stewardship of Graham and the leaders at Vodafone Qatar.
So, quick question. When you were at Vodafone Qatar, it was Vodafone building up Vodafone in Qatar. So it was like a startup. I can understand how a purpose-based organization would work there. Now you say you worked in insurance, you worked in banking. For me, these are very conservative, maybe not purpose-driven, not people driven. They're usually money driven, very rational businesses. Is that correct? Or were you possible with all the learnings that you had from Graham to even transform these so rational organizations and bring purpose back to an insurance or a banking background?
Dominic, it's a very observant point. You know, I think you're right. We were mavericks at Vodafone Qatar. We had the latitude to do the craziest things, you know, with the consequences thereafter, but we were small enough to deal with the consequences. But it was fun to be a maverick and to be able to act like a bit of a cowboy, and to be politically correct, cow person, perhaps. But you could really take a lot of risks, right? And you could get away with it. Chalk it up to experience. You're right. I mean, coming back into a more conservative environment, very established environments, banking is ripe for disruption, but the bankers don't like to be disrupted, right? And so I got back into very, very stable, very conservative, very big environments, right? And you kind of just got along with it. You know, people were there and there wasn't a lot of innovation. We just kind of went through it as business as usual and making money, hopefully, did relatively well. And until I came across Discovery, a 30-year-old company, right? But led by a visionary in himself who started 31 years ago with a very clear idea. And he too had this very clear purpose in mind. So you could argue as a startup, it made sense, you know, for a person like Adrian Gore, who is the CEO of Discovery, to have started with this core purpose of wanting to make people healthier. And it worked for him. But what I'd like to say is that as much as Discovery is now established into a 31-year-old brand, very established businesses, leaders in many of its categories, it's being able to transpose this purpose and the ideals and the values that we have as Discovery into new forms of businesses. So about 3 years ago, we started a bank, and people would have thought we're crazy because you have five very big banks in South Africa, very well run, very well capitalized. I mean, they're just juggernauts from a banking perspective in South Africa. So you'd be crazy to be starting a bank in this context. You would never compete against people of this size or banks of this size. And yet we were able to say, well, there's things that we can do very differently as a business. But fundamentally, we have this purpose, and that is to make people healthier, enhance and protect their lives. How does this apply to something like banking? It seems incongruent, right? But the data showed us that if you appeal to people who were conscious about their health, their lifestyle, they effectively are conscious about their finances and how they manage money. And we could use this behavior to our advantage in the sense that if people are good with their finances, we're able to create value for them and open a bank on that difference. And what you find now is a bank that's very, very much based on a very innovative tech platform. It is mobile first, but its core differentiation is that it's attracting young, vibrant users who see the value in banking with a partner that's able to reward them in a manner that they see fit. So it's amazing to see how something as seemingly divergent as health, making people healthier, has effectively been transposed into something completely unaligned, seemingly, which is banking, and it's working.
That's incredible. So listening to your story, Feroz, what is the vision for the bank itself? So you know, following still the purpose to make people healthier, what's the vision to build up for here?
So, Catherine, I think, again, so we've got ambition, a very strong ambitions around the bank, you know. So sure. As the context of the country is that we have very strong banks in the country. You know, even through the 2008 crisis, the South African banking system was exceptionally strong, and it remains the case today. For us to break through, you know, we've got to continuously grow various other elements of our bank. We're growing in customer numbers. We need to get our lending products out there. So we've got a lot of work to do. However, if you consider Discovery and its purpose and the impact that we've had from a health perspective, from a banking perspective, from an insurance perspective, we see an opportunity for us at a global level to make an impact globally. So what is important for context here is that while Discovery is a South Africa domiciled company, we have our platform, which is called Vitality. It's our behavior change platform that underpins everything that we do. We're exporting this globally. We have exported this globally to insurers in Asia, in America, in Europe, where they plug into their own insurance platforms and they allow this behavior change model to unlock value for clients. So the healthier you are, the lower your insurance premiums are, theoretically. So, and that's how they're using it, right? So it's a tech platform that we export. Now, the ambition is, how do we make this purpose come to life at a global scale? So we set these ambitions around, how do we make 100 million people more active by 2025? That was an ambition that we set ourselves. And we're fast approaching that. And we're going to continue to grow these ambitions to have a global presence, global relevance, but that speaks very much core to what Discovery's initial purpose was, which is to make people healthier. So we'll always be articulating these ambitions at a global level, but frame it from a healthier perspective, because we fundamentally believe that making the world a healthier place leads to benefits in all aspects of our lives and society at large.
That's incredible. Thank you so much for kind of like, you know, bringing those points together. And, you know, what a beautiful way to incentivize, you know, customers to make this positive behavioral change. And, you know, I guess most of our listeners are adults. I think we've all had of our experiences of how challenging it can sometimes be to make changes that last. So it sounds like a really well-rounded model that, you know, puts the incentives in the right places to help people, you know, get to the point where they can lead the healthier life for themselves. That's incredible. So when you, you know, look at the people who work there and the way you engage with everyone, not just in South Africa, but around the world, I'm just curious, is there like very strong values that are quite active and dominant in the organization as well?
Absolutely, Catherine. I think, you know, you can't fulfill this purpose without being clear around the values that everybody needs to subscribe to. And we have a set of values. You know, it's very much about the customer, and we're always looking to disrupt the status quo. And for me, those two particular sets of values define integrally what Discovery is all about. If you speak to a customer, particularly in South Africa, the one thing that resonates with them, as far as the brand is concerned, is that is an extremely innovative brand. We love the way you guys go to market and how you market your product. You're so much better than the others. And if you consider Discovery in size relative to some of the other insurers, certainly relative to the other banks, we're much smaller. We punch way above our weight. It's because we have this relentless pursuit of excellence. We force ourselves. The cadence of innovation is we force it upon ourselves. We'll extract excellence, we'll extract brilliance out of everything that we bring to market. And so that forcefulness comes through at least once a year. So in September every year, we must have a defining launch of new innovation across all of our products. And now it's actually the cadence has grown to at least two times a year because of the number of products that need to be launched. But that's what we hold ourselves to. There'll never be a time where Discovery goes through a period without having launched a seminal product that is, again, in each one of the business verticals that we operate in.
You were saying you punch way above your weight class. That's phenomenal, especially in marketing. I know that you're like a marketing genius and now the chief marketing officer of Discovery Limited in South Africa. So what impact does the purpose, the vision, the values have that enables you with like all your marketing ideas to punch way above your weight class?
First, I'm not a genius. I'm very lucky is what I am. I get to work with really amazing people. I'm surrounded by exceptionally talented, exceptionally intelligent people. And the difference is in both, and if I draw the parallel between Discovery and Vodafone Qatar, the difference is the ability to try new things, not be afraid to test, not be afraid to make mistakes, not be afraid to venture and travel that the road less traveled and see where it takes you. and with the acceptance that, listen, sometimes it doesn't work out, right? And we reward failure in a sense. We're like, or at least we're not punitive around failure, right? Graham was that kind of guy. Vodafone Qatar was that kind of place, right? We were small. We were punching way above our weight. We're trying. The story I have to tell you is the biggest product that one could conceive in a place like Vodafone Qatar was called international calling. Basically, because most of the country is made up of expats, essentially. And most of those people are from the Indian subcontinent, Sri Lanka, Nepal, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh. And effectively, these people need to call home, but it needs to be at an affordable rate because they're not the highest of earners in the country. So how does one make the world of difference to all the people in Qatar, which incidentally is the purpose statement of Vodafone Qatar, or was the purpose statement of Vodafone Qatar, is how do we, effectively, the answer is right in front of you, make international calling as affordable as possible for everybody, for the bulk of the country. If I want to call South Africa, it at the time would cost me 50 dirham. So there was this conversation, how do we cut through, right? Qtel, Ooredoo now, big incumbent, has lots of money, can really drown you out, advertise you into the ground. They've got strong network, they've got a customer base, everything's going for them, perfect incumbent. So how does one go and disrupt? And Graham asked me the question, I remember this very clearly because I tell the story, is that if you're going to make a dent in this, how are you going to do this? And I said, Graham, you got to go in and say it's 50 dirham anywhere in the world, you know, you're going to cut through immediately. And he's like, are you guys sure about this? And people were saying, yeah, that's risky. You're going to poke the bear in Qtel. They're going to come at you. And I'm like, well, you don't have any other option. You got to cut through this thing, man. And he's like, we'll go for it. And true is nuts. We went in. It was super successful. But Qtel came in like a sledgehammer. And they punched me out in the sense that, you know, they undercut the price and they were out there. It was a full-on war. But Graham didn't come to me and says, you called it and you called it wrong. He's like, that was the right, I support you. It was the right thing to do. We've learned our lesson, but you made an impact. Now that was the kind of leader the man was, right? And if I look back at it, would I have still done it? I probably would have still done the same thing. But I've learned a lesson around what an incumbent can do to you, right? And I've carried those kind of lessons with me. I still do things like that in the bank because we're a small bank relative to the others. But there's no better way to get noticed than to poke the bear, right? And so that's in my nature, is I'm going to be provocative in the way we go to market.
How much is 50 dirham in like euro or in US dollar? How, like, just on average?
I think you have to divide it by 3.65. So it's probably about 10 US cents.
And euro. Okay.
10 US cents, sorry.
10 cents. Euro cents. Okay. Yeah, that's quite a lot. Okay. So how do you then, when you say like we reward failure, how does this show up? Do you have an example where like somebody is making like a clear mistake and you now say, okay, you tried, you failed, but it was good, we learned something from this. How does this show up in discovery at your current role?
Dominic, it happens, I would say, almost every day, right? But I'll think of the more kind of the more seismic ones, you know, that I look at our businesses in the UK. You know, one would think that, you know, you build up these big businesses like Vitality Invest or Vitality Car, for that matter. And I have a lot of respect for the leadership there because they've realized that market conditions and the market itself is probably not poised for us to compete effectively in those markets with those two products. And they were decisive, as big as a job as it was, and as risky as it was from a reputation perspective, to extricate themselves from those businesses. And it was the right decision for them to make. Nobody ever turned around and said, well, why did you even get into an invest business in the UK? Or you knew that it was a highly competitive motor insurance market in the UK. Why didn't you consider that before you went into it? No. The guys had an idea. We believe we have a framework and a business model that competes with the best globally, and we needed to go in and do something. There were extraneous factors that came into play with both of these businesses, but the clarity of the leadership to say, well, we've tried this, we don't believe this is the right business for us right now, we can extricate ourselves from it, we take the pain and we move on. And that that's an example of when it comes out, even when you have to report to your stakeholders, your analysts and the market, saying, here's why we made the decisions that we made. And everybody backs it. There's no finger pointing. There's no, yeah, we should have, we could have, you know. We made a decision. We went into it as a team. And we're making the decision as a team that we're going to get out of it.
That's absolutely brilliant. And makes so much sense, because if I want to, you know, poke the bear and be the disruptor, I've got to try out stuff. Otherwise, you know, I can never disrupt if I always go the safe path and I never, you know, try the things that nobody else tries. How am I ever going to make an impact of that scale, as you were explaining earlier? If I may come back to something you said earlier, Feroz, and I love that so much. You said, you know, I just have the privilege or the honor to work with exceptionally talented and smart people. What's your secret of attracting them? How do you get them, you know, in the position to work in your teams and to work with you for that mission and that purpose that you guys have created?
I'd like to say it's me, but it's not. This brand, particularly in South Africa, is very pervasive when it comes to attracting talent, particularly the type of talent that that is integral to our business: actuarial talent, data science, and even marketing. Because, like I said to you earlier, Dominic, we punch above our weight from a marketing perspective, you know. And so I think there's an allure, there's a halo effect around this brand that attracts people. I also would say that, you know, they're characters within the business. Like Graham was a character that people knew almost before Vodafone Qatar. You know, they knew about Graham before that, and he kind of, in a sense, superseded the brand in some ways. And Adrian is that kind of individual. You know, he's highly respected across our industry, but across the country as well. You know, the people look to him for leadership. People look to him for guidance. People look to him for wisdom. And to be part of a company that is led the manner in which it's led here, and to be surrounded by thinkers such as Adrian and the other founders and people that have grew up with this business, is an enormous privilege, particularly if you're an actuary, particularly if you're into data science. You know, and I'd like to say particularly if you're into marketing as well, but I'm only 5 years old here, so I've got nothing to do with that. So I think that's the aura of Discovery. Now, I believe that businesses and brands have an aura. It's a living, breathing thing. And that's what allows this brand to make its way into people's homes, into their hearts, into their mind space, that they want to be a part of it somehow. Either as a client, or in this case, Catherine, to your point, as I want to be part of something, you know, and I want to be there making a difference.
I love that. What recommendation would you have to, like, somebody who is like maybe the managing director of a company, and they also want to get their brand like in the minds and hearts of their customers? And what should they do? What would your one thing, your one recommendation for them be? How do they start a journey of getting their product in the minds and hearts of other people?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many ways to answer this question, right, Dominic? I mean, there's almost not a single correct answer. I would say, but in the context of the topic that we really sort of anchoring on today, I would use it as my primary answer regardless, which is, are you clear about why you're in business? And is that purpose clear to your client? Because if it's clear to your client and they resonate with that purpose, they have every reason to want to be part of you, of your success, of your business. But if you're not clear about it, and if your client's not clear about it, no matter what you put out there, if it's going to be successful, it's commoditized. There's a use case for it, and, you know, somebody else will come along tomorrow, offer them something similar at a lower price, and off you go, right? But if there's a fundamental rooted purpose that they resonate, you've got a business. And as I was saying earlier to you guys, is that the money will flow. Because that's the key. It's the resonance with the hearts and minds of people. And typically, to get to that resonance, you need to have a higher order belief. Your purpose needs to be high order enough that connects with the soul of people. We're all human beings at the end of the day. We have some root cause needs, right? If you're able to tap into that, nothing else really matters, because you're fulfilling fundamental human needs. and the need to want to be healthier, insurance products are after the fact, right? Nobody likes insurance. Everybody hates insurance. It's a grudge purchase. I pay a lot of it every month. Do I see the value? These are the questions we ask ourselves. But I do have the need to want to be healthier for myself, for my family, for the people around me. And if that contributes to a healthier society, then I'm doing something really profoundly good. And yes, for me to be a part of that, I need to buy some insurance, right? You can see how by connecting with people at that level makes them want to be part of your story, makes them want to be part of your ecosystem.
What a wonderful wrap up to this interview, right? So follow a higher order purpose, and then the money will follow. You've got to inspire people with that purpose. You've got to give them something that not only your employees, but also your customers understand and can follow. And then business will come naturally. Love that. Thank you so much, Feroz, for being with us today. Thank you for sharing your stories. It's been an absolute honor and privilege talking to you today. And we wish you all the best and see you soon. Thank you so much.
Catherine and Dominique, it has been absolute pleasure. Thank you for kind of taking me down this this journey and to bring back a hell of a lot of memories. So that's been fantastic. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Feroz. Bye.
That's it for today with Vierklang Strategy Coaching in our Chief of Anything podcast. If you would like to discover the impact of Vierklang Strategy Coaching for your company, then simply click on the link in the description and get in touch with us.